Our gospel lesson this morning, also from the book edition, John 5, 1 through 9. Afterward, Jesus returned to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy days. Inside the city near the sheep gate was the pool of Bethesda with five covered porches. Crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. One of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. When Jesus saw him and knew how long he had been ill, he asked him, "Would you like to get well?" "I can't, sir," the sick man said, "for I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred up. While I am trying to get there, someone else always gets ahead of me." Jesus told him, "Stand up, pick up your sleeping mat, and walk." Instantly, the man was healed. He rolled up the mat and began walking. But this miracle, happened on the Sabbath day. This again is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that anthem. Thank you, Paul and Beverly. Don't you love the story that Lane shared with us from the fifth chapter of John? The pool of Bethesda, the man who had been sick for how many years? 38 years. Jesus heals him. Experts for centuries told us that there was no pool of Bethesda. They said this is an allegory because it says it had five porticos or five porches. Pools would be symmetrical, so you would have four porches. You would have six, but you wouldn't have five. Because this is an allegory, this is symbolic. This represents the five porticos, and the pool represents Judaism, the old way, the five books of the law, the Torah, the Pentateuch. Jesus was telling this man to take up his mat, to take up all that confined him and restricted him, all of the laws of Judaism, to take it up and to walk away into newness of life. Now that sounds great, and I think a lot of that is very true about this passage. Only in 1964, archaeologists digging in Jerusalem discovered the Pool of Bethesda. And guess what? It has five porticos. I'm not going to listen to those experts anymore. This is a great story. Now, Lane read to us from the book. You may have a different translation, but I bet most of you don't have the fourth verse. Only the King James Version includes the fourth verse. And while it was not in the original manuscripts, which is why most of us don't have it, it does explain to us what was going on here. Because you know when Jesus asked the man if he wants to be healed, he said, well, I don't have anybody to help me into the pool. What's that all about? Well, if you look at the King James Version, the fourth verse reads, for an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then, first after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. Don't you just love the King James? Whosoever was made whole of the whatsoever. When the angel troubled the waters. Well, in 1964, when the archaeologists discovered this pool, they discovered something else. There was an underground stream that fed this pool. And if you know anything about pools that are fed by underground streams, you know that every now and then you'll see some bubbling. Every now and then the waters will be troubled, and that's exactly what was going on in the pool of Bethesda. And they interpreted this as an angel that stirred the waters, that troubled the waters, and whosoever made it into the waters first, they were cured of the whatsoever disease that they had. I've always thought it was interesting, perplexing perhaps, that Jesus even asked this guy, do you want to be healed? I mean, it's like the guy says, well, yeah, duh. Like I've been here for 38 years. What do you think? But the truth is, not everybody wants to be healed, do they? On Monday morning, as we embarked on our 20th annual Bible study field trip, we had one of our great traditions in our field trips. We watched an episode of the Andy Griffith Show. And this is the one when the new druggist, Ellie Walker, comes to town. You remember that? So Ellie comes to town But everybody's not happy about this new druggist, especially a lady by the name of Emma. Now, in this episode, she's called Emma Brand. Most times, she's called Emma Watson, because Emma came to get her pills that cost her 10 cents, and Ellie asked for her prescription. And she's never had a prescription. She just comes and pays her 10 cents and gets her pills. And Ellie tells her she cannot have the pills. And that kicks off a major crisis in Mayberry. But you see, Ellie realized that they were nothing but sugar pills. They weren't helping her. She wasn't really sick. But Emma didn't want to be healed because of all the attention she got. Because people came by and brought her food and soup and casseroles and all kind of good food. And she was on the prayer list at the churches, and everybody said, "Oh, Emma, we feel so sorry for you. Are you doing better today, honey? Are you doing better today?" There's some people who don't want to be healed. But I've also found it fascinating. This man never says, "Yes, I want to be healed." What he does is he tells Jesus all the reasons he cannot. He said, "You look around this pool and you look at me. You see that guy over there? He has leprosy. Well, he may have leprosy, but he's got two good legs. Now, when the water stirs, when the water is stirred, who do you think is going to get in that pool first? Now, look at this guy over here. This guy over here is paralyzed like I am. He's lame. But look, he's got two big guys standing beside him, and they're just waiting. They're just waiting for that water to be troubled, and they're going to throw him in that pool. I don't have anyone to help me." And so what he does is he talks about the demographics. He breaks down the whosoevers. He breaks down the whatsoevers. He has all of the trends. He has all of the statistics. He has all of the data. He has all of the probabilities. And he said, "When you look at this Jesus, there is no way that I can ever be healed. It just won't work." That's what the experts say. Jesus didn't pay a bit of attention to that. He didn't want to see his charts and his graphs and his all the statistics. He looked at that man and he said, "Get up, stand up, wake up, take up your bed and march out of here." And that's exactly what the guy does. Now I want to ask you a question. I want to raise an issue. There were dozens of people beside that pool. Why only this one? Why didn't Jesus have everybody get in that pool and heal everyone? Any of you remember a movie that came out a number of years ago? It was in 1985, called Cocoon. It was directed by Ron Howard, our Mayberry connection. And it's about the elderly residents of this retirement home who discover a swimming pool that has healing powers. And so they go and swim in that pool, and some guy that has cancer is healed, and some guy that couldn't see now has 20/20 vision so he can drive again. And then all the other residents start to say, "Hey, what's happening here?" "Well, there's this pool over here, and if you jump in the pool, you're going to be healed." So then they all go jump in the pool, which creates the problem. The other problem was the pool was really owned by aliens, but that's a different issue. But they were all jumping in that pool, and they were all being healed, and they were staying out all night dancing, and it was an interesting movie. Don't you think Jesus could have gotten a lifeguard whistle? And he could have walked down in those waters, and he could blow that whistle and say, "Everybody in! Come on in, the water's fine. And everybody would have jumped in that pool or pulled into that pool. Somehow they would have gotten in that pool and everybody would have been healed. That would have been right up there with feeding the 5,000, don't you think? That would have been a headliner miracle. But for some reason, he only heals this one guy. And if you read the rest of that fifth chapter, of all the people at the pool that day, this guy was probably the least deserving. He shows absolutely no gratitude. He never says thank you. No humility. In fact, he ends up getting Jesus in trouble, as we'll see in a few minutes. You see, there's a reason for this. This is not just a miracle. John says this is a sign. Many of us have just studied the seven signs in the Gospel of John. A sign points to something beyond itself. There's a deeper meaning here. And in order to understand what this deeper meaning is, we need to look at the details. And one of the details was that this fella had been sick for 38 years. Now, if you've been in my Bible studies, especially in the Gospel of John, you know that I tell you every number has significance. It has a meaning. So what about 38? It's easy to get a 7 or 100 or 1,000. Or 5, but what about 38? What does that mean? Go ask you a question. How many years did the children of Israel wander in the wilderness? How many days did it rain? 40. Now, you know I'm setting you up. You know this is a trick question. So how many years did they wander in the wilderness? 40 years. Unless you go to the second chapter of Deuteronomy, and I've got the official Bible, I have the duct tape Bible. This is what it says. It's talking about from the time that they left, said from the time we left Kadesh Barnea, which was right outside of Egypt, until we crossed the brook Zered, which was going into the promised land, was 38 years. They wandered in that wilderness 38 years. You say, well, where do we come up with 40? Well, 40 is a better biblical number. We just kind of rounded it off. It took a little while to get ready to go. It took a little while to unpack. So 40 years. But this guy had been sick for 38 years. Do you know why they wandered in the wilderness for 38 years? It wasn't because Moses refused to ask directions. They wandered in the wilderness for 38 years because they listened to the experts. 13th chapter of Numbers. Moses sends out spies. How many? How many tribes of Israel? Are you all with me today? How many disciples, people? 12. How many tribes of Israel? 12. How many spies? 12. He sends out 12 spies. And they come back. And this is what they say. They said, man, there is no way that we can conquer this promised land. These people are giants. You know, they brought back the grapes that were so big, they had to carry them on a pole. They said, if you think this is something, you ought to see the people who grew them. He said, they are fortified. They are huge. They know how to fight. The people are too numerous. The people are too established. The people are too powerful. They're too entrenched for us. And then they got out the graphs. They talked about the demographics. They talked about the whatsoever. They talked about the trends. They talked about the probabilities. They talked about the possibilities. They talked about the odds. And they said, there is no way that we can take this land, the experts. But there were two of the spies who had a dissenting report, a minority report. Remember who they were? Caleb and Joshua. Write that down. You may need it on Jeopardy one day. They came back and said, hold on. These guys are exactly right. The people in that land are big and powerful and established, but this is the promised land. God has promised this land to us. If God is for us, who can be against us? And Joshua said, if the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us into this land and he will give it to us, this land that flows with milk and honey. But we must not rebel against God. By the way, Joshua is a Hebrew name that means Yahweh saves. God saves. And if you take Joshua in the Hebrew, and you translate it into the Greek, you get the name Jesus, Jesus. Jesus means God saves. We have heard the joyful sound. Jesus saves. Jesus saves. This story is more than an allegory, but I think there is a powerful message for us today. This is a sign for us. And the question is, First Baptist Lexington, do we want to be healed? Do we want to be made whole? When we were talking about this in my Thursday morning Bible study, I told the guys, I said, I'm tired of listening to the experts. I'm tired of hearing people come to our church and say, just look at the demographics, just look at what's going on in mainline denominationalism, just look at the people that we have here. So how many people do we have here under 40? That's exactly what I thought. We're all the old people. Just look at all the changes that are taking place. Listen, I've got eyes. I can see what's going on. You can see what's going on. 38 years. 38 years ago, it was 1979. This church had over 1,300 members. We had 785 in Sunday school. We had 63 children in the children's choirs. We had 46 in the youth choir. And we had 41 in the sanctuary choir. There was no senior adult choir because we were all young, I guess. So I know what the demographics say. Oh, by the way, I opened the paper yesterday. Did you see this? This is exactly what I'm talking about. There's an article in the Dispatch that says, if it doesn't stem its decline, mainline Protestantism has just 23 Easters left. They're telling us we're on the way out. I don't think I'm going to listen to the experts. I want to listen to Jesus. And Jesus is telling us to wake up, to rise up, to stand up, and to take our mat, take our security, take all of our excuses, take our apathy, take our weaknesses, and let us start walking. Well, where are we going? What are we going to do? See, I think that's the rest of the story. Because if you look very closely at this, there's another dimension to this healing. I mentioned that of all the people that surrounded the Pool of Bethesda that day, this guy may have been the least deserving. He never says he wants to be healed. He never expresses any gratitude. And when people ask him, who healed you? He goes, I don't know. And then when he finds out, he goes to the authorities and he said, hey, you know that troublemaker Jesus you've been looking for? I know where you can find him. The guy is a bum. He's ungrateful. He never comes to faith that we know of. The interesting thing about the Pool of Bethesda, the Pool of Bethesda was in the very shadows of the temple. And within the shadows of this church, we have dozens of people. We have hundreds of people who need healing. But I want to tell you something right up front. They're not all going to be grateful. Many of them won't be very cooperative. They're not going to turn into wonderful church members who look like us and dress like us and put a lot of money in the offering plate. But there are a lot of people out there who need our help that maybe don't deserve it. And I think that's exactly why Jesus healed this man, a man who did not deserve it. This guy who has no gratitude, no humility, no desire to improve himself. He's been on the welfare rolls for 38 years. He depends on others to provide for him. He expects others to provide for him. He demands that others provide for him. That's the guy that Jesus healed. And Fred Craddock said, this is a story about God's grace. This is a story about the undeserved, unmerited love of God. Jesus did not heal this man because of who the man was. He didn't heal him because he deserved it, but he healed him because of who Jesus was. And Jesus is saying to our church, wake up, rise up, get up. You know what I'm going to do with stuff like this? Chad, I'm glad you're not editor anymore. That's all I got to say about that. Are we going to listen to the experts? Are we going to listen to Jesus? 43 years ago, when we were doing this study in Bible study, I told them about going to my first church down in L.A., Lower Alabama, 43 years ago. I'll never forget sitting in the pastor's office. Dear Dr. Graham, one of the kindest men God ever created. And I was sitting in his office with good old Brother Bill. The church hired Brother Bill and hired me at the same time. I was young, enthusiastic, had absolutely no experience. Good old Brother Bill had been employed by about 40 churches, 40 days and 40 nights in each one. Dear Brother Bill had been around the block. Brother Bill came in as the expert. Brother Bill was old. I mean, the guy was probably in his late 50s. He was really old. I'll never forget sitting in the pastor's office when Dr. Graham said, Ray, tell us what you're planning to do this summer. And I had all these wonderful plans, and I had all these ideas, and this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to do. And everything I said, Brother Bill said, Ray, that won't work. Ray, we tried that in Demopolis one time. Ray, this won't work. I just read a study on this. Ray, people won't respond to this. And everything I said, he had a reason why we couldn't do it. I made two commitments sitting in that office. Number one, I said, I'm not going to listen to Brother Bill. The second commitment was, I said, when I get old like him, I don't want to be like Brother Bill. I want to tell you something. I'm older now than Brother Bill was then. I know I'm old because Peggy asked me at Kiwanis, I came in Kiwanis Thursday, and Peggy said, good to have you back. And I said, it's better, thank you. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, my back is better. She said, I didn't know you were having any trouble with your back. I said, well, yeah, but it's better. She said, I said, good to have you back. I said, I can't hear her either. Hey, I know I'm old, but I don't want to be like Brother Bill. I want us to wake up, to stand up, to walk out of here, and to take the gospel to the people for whom Jesus died, whether they deserve it or not, because come to think of it, I don't deserve it either. And neither do you. And so at the end of the summer, they were having a little going away party for me. We were having it out at the lake. We had a picnic. We had a cookout. And they were doing all these wonderful things. And Brother Bill was there. And he came up to me and he said, Ray, I told you if you just listened to me, it would turn out like this. And I said, you're right, Brother Bill. You're right. Are you ready to wake up? Are you ready to stand up, rise up, take whatever's been holding us back, and let us walk with the good news of Jesus the Christ. Amen.